What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Everyday Parent Part Podcast. We are in part two of this conversation on raising emotionally healthy kids with Dr. Josh Straub. And so if you haven't listened to last week's episode, I would highly encourage you to go back and listen. It was incredible. And honestly, Josh, I'd love to just pick up where we left off, where we talked a lot about, you talked about in the last episode, where our parents, as parents, your kids' emotions, their emotional floor is your ceiling. And I texted my wife when we were recording. It was just like, hey, this episode's going to be good, because I see that in both of us. I can see that in myself when I left the house to go to college and different things like that, where I quickly found my emotional deficiencies and different things like that. And so thank you so much for, you know, just sharing things like that. And so, I think one thing that you talked a lot about, and honestly, it almost made me emotional. You talked about just getting eye level with your kids and telling them that you love them and different things like that. But I think as we were talking through a lot of this stuff, the first question that came to my mind is like, this all sounds great, but the reality is like, I know how our schedule was growing up. There wasn't time for this. There wasn't time for my parents to stop and have these emotionally based conversations with me, because we filled up the calendar. Either it was their work or our sports. And so what would be your encouragement to parents that are listening and are just like, yeah, that sounds great, I just don't have the time to do that?
Yeah, man, you said so much there that I'd love to respond to. First thing to your, no, it's so good. It's so good. The first thing that I would respond to there is to go, where don't you have the time? Because Chronos time is just simply all it is a measurement. It's like feet, inches. It's like everything else. It's just a measurement of how objects and people move through space. So all we're doing is measuring that. We fill it with things in our culture. And I think part of filling it is to numb us. I think it's part of the matrix that we find ourselves in, and which is a whole other, can of worms. But I think we have to pay attention, especially as believers, we have to pay attention to, we're choosing what we say yes to in terms of time. And we're choosing what we're saying yes to in terms of our, what we're talking about, the conversations that we're having. And, you know, as I go to scripture, I don't see Jesus rallying and racing to get from thing to thing. I see Jesus going and going off alone. There are times that he's busy. There's times he's been with a lot of people, but you quickly see him retreat. And, you know, as we're talking about it, you said, you know, it brings you to tears, almost brought you to tears there, getting into a child's level and saying, I love you. I think we want to ask ourselves the question, what brings us alive? Like, to even think about in when you were growing up, was there someone in your life who they showed up for you in a way that you felt like you were the bee's knees? Like every time, you could have been an aunt or an uncle, it could have been a parent, could have been a coach or a teacher, a pastor. When you walked into a room, it was like you felt like you were the only person in the world. And you felt deeply loved and connected to and cherished. And it's like we long for that feeling, and so are our kids. But when we race them from activity to activity to thing, I think the biggest question I would ask is, why are we doing that? For what purpose are we doing that? Bronnie Ware, who was a palliative care nurse in Australia, she wrote a book called The Five Regrets of Dying. And she would sit with dying people and she would ask them what their regrets were. And the greatest regret, I'm going to give the top three regrets. The number one regret, and this was another reason that after last week's episode, kind of one of the reasons of the famous at home mantra. The number one regret was, I wish I would have lived the life that I wanted rather than what other people expected of me. Number one regret. Number two regret is, I wish I wouldn't have worked so much. Number three regret is, I wish I would have shared my feelings with my loved ones. And I think you're speaking to all three of those things in this one question of, we don't have enough time, we're running ragged. Why are we running ragged? Why are we in the sports that we're in? Why are our kids in each of the activities that they're in? And what would it look like to live differently? What would it look like to maybe pursue relationships at a different level? And I think as you were sharing there, the heart of God is to be present with us. Emotions are a gateway to experiencing the love of the Father. Emotions are the gateway to experiencing our presence with Jesus. And it's our presence with Jesus that fills us up to live a holy and righteous life before Him. It's not anything that we do. It's His working in us.
Yeah.
And when we don't create space for that, what we're doing is we're shutting out that spiritual development as well. And that's why emotions are so important to me as it relates to my kids and how I raise them, is because I think emotional and spiritual growth go hand in hand. Peter Scazzaro wrote about this in his book, Emotionally Healthy Spirituality. And I just see it over and over and over again. And so I think first we take a step back and we get sticky notes, put all your activities on a sticky note, lay them on a table and go, everything's on the table. Everything's on the chopping block. God, what is it that you want us to be saying yes to? And just start to prioritize that in your schedule and create opportunities for conversation, for emotion in the home. Even if you are living a full life, we're all living full lives. Create emotional conversation in the home, tucking your kids into bed at night, Deuteronomy 6, around the dinner table, in the morning when you wake up. Put screen time away when you're driving in the car. Put screen time away when you're tucking them into bed. Put screens away during dinner. Instead of screens, share what's going on in the day. It doesn't always have to be emotional conversation, but what you do is you create the moments.
Yeah.
You create the atmosphere for those conversations to come about.
I think that's so wise. We often live really rushed. And like you pointed out, we don't see Jesus rushing off from place to place. He lived a very unhurried life and was intentional with how he stewarded his time. And I think my husband has this saying all the time. He'll say, you make time for what matters to you. And so when we as parents step back and evaluate, what do we truly value? What do we want to prioritize in this particular season of our kids' lives? So to hear you say, like, hey, what are the rhythms or the habits that you guys have as a family unit, to really lean in and make the most of those moments. Like, I think you mentioned some things about screen-free times or zones. How have you seen technology and, we see so many adults and kids attached to screens. How has that even impacted our ability to connect on an emotional level? And what advice, like, for parents? Like, I mean, obviously there's, like, it's like the game changer. Like, can you put your phone away for an hour a day? Or, like, hey, can dinner time be a screen-free zone? But, like, are there, for the parent that's listening and just thinking, I'm so overwhelmed, like, what is one thing I could do differently to better connect with my kids?
Man, yeah, I mean, putting the screen away is that's a whole other can of worms there, because I think...
Another episode, sorry.
You know, oh, my goodness. Yeah, that's a whole other can of worms. Well, because what you do is we're phones and screens are to amuse us. And when you put the letter A in front of a word, it negates its definition. So the word muse means to think deeply, to meditate and to think deeply. And you put the letter A in front of it, it means to not think deeply.
Wow.
And so what we're doing is we're amusing an entire generation into a creative impotence, because it requires boredom and relationships for creativity and imagination to kick in.
Yeah.
And so if you really want to have creative conversations and creative kids, and you want your kids to lead, I think we as believers need to pay attention. We want our children to lead the next generation. Well, they have to be creative. They have to be imaginative. You know, they have to be interesting. And screens are numbing all that out. And so I think to your point is, I'm going to, two things there. You said your husband, talks about you'll make time for the things that you prioritize or that matter to you. And then earlier, it was said, I can't remember who said it, but it was, just getting your kids into their eye level, brought me tears. And I'm going, what are the things that move you? Just think about that. What are the things that move you in a day? And start paying attention to those things. Because if something moves you, we should be making time for that. And I don't know about you, but I get done watching a television show. Most shows, I get done watching it, or even if I'm scrolling on my phone, I get done. It hasn't moved me.
Yeah.
Now, there's some movies, there's some TV shows that will move me. But one of the things that we do is we, with our kids, is we say, we consume in order to create. Hmm. So if we're consuming something, I want it to inspire me to go create in the world around me. And so, I mean, our kids will watch Dude Perfect and Mark Rober on YouTube. And then I can't tell you the number of trick shot videos that are on my phone. And, right. you know, and they're creating all these. I mean, that's one of the reasons our son wanted a workbench, is he wants to do all these, you know, engineering projects and things. And so we're all about saying, hey, let's go create stuff rather than consume. And so our daughter, you know, she started a little gumball machine business at local coffee shops here, because she saw kids coming into the coffee shops without, you know, mom and dad going, no, you can't get a muffin because it's $4. And,
right.
But the kids wanting something, and she's going, well, I could create a business and create value by putting in a gumball machine and a little toy, 25-cent toy machine. And so she does that. She starts a business. She starts learning how to function with business and profit and loss. But also she's creating value, because we're hearing so many stories of parents that come just for that, and their kids can hang out. And so we constantly are asking the question, how do we create value in the world around us? Paul says to be a living letter, 2 Corinthians 3, we are a living letter into the world. And I think to disciple our kids well is to keep that at the forefront. How can we be Jesus to the world around us? And I think when we start asking those questions, rather than approaching screens with how do we set limits on them, we start to create other things that are more interesting than screens. And that's what we try to do.
Josh, you just said something that literally will flip parenting upside down. And how do we, when we start asking that question, how do we create value instead of how do we not be a distraction? How do we do, you know, how do we not make everybody upset in the room? That changes how we parent. Like now we're not, hey, stop this. But now we're creating within our kids how to look at the world differently. I love that. I've never even thought about that.
Yeah, but, I mean, at the end of the day, the fruit of the Spirit, right? How do we help our kids be love, joy, peace, you know, grow in that fruit and create the environment for that? That's the key, yeah.
So how do you get to a point where, you know, whether it's in a disciplinary moment or something, like how do you help your kids? You know, we've gone through the process of understanding our own emotions, but then how do you then allow your kids to feel their emotions in a healthy way without suppressing them? And I think an instance that's coming to mind immediately is, like, you know, when I was growing up, if you were crying, it was like, hey, stop crying. And I've been told that that is what then teaches you to avoid some emotions. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's just what I've heard. And so how do you navigate letting your kids feel emotions, but in more appropriate times without maybe confusing them? Does that question make sense?
Yeah, I think it's important for, so great example of this is our kids, our two oldest are in jiu-jitsu. 12-year-old son comes home about 2 weeks ago, and he leaves jiu-jitsu, and as soon as he gets in the truck, he starts crying. And I'm like, what's going on? And couldn't figure it out. He had hurt his shoulder the week prior. And going into that night, I told him, you know, just go 70-80%. Tell coach, I know his coach well, tell coach you can't go 100%, but go 70-80%. Just allow it to be okay. So I'm processing with him on the way home. I'm going, dude, is your shoulder hurt? Like, is it really hurt? Like, do I need to take you into the doctor? Because I couldn't figure out what was behind the tears. And so it's a great example to go, you know, when your kids are crying, when they have tears, when they are, you know, what would the tears say if they could speak, is one of the phrases I use with my kids a lot. What would the tears say if they could speak? And, you know, is it the actual pain? And he said, no, it's not the pain. And I couldn't figure it out. So his sister's in the truck, and he was already crying. And so I was like, you know what, I'm just going to drop it till we get home. We got home. I pulled him into a separate room. And I said, talk to me. I was like, if the tears could talk, what would they say? And then he just said, Dad, I was embarrassed tonight. Mm. And I said, buddy, tell me what that embarrassment was about. He said, well, they were doing one-on-ones, so the entire class watches them go against somebody else. Mm. And he went up against somebody else that he normally beats, and he got beat because his shoulder, he couldn't do it because of his shoulder. He was in pain. And I'm like, dude, like I told you for 70%, that's okay. But he's like, but the class didn't know that. And I was like, well, so why does that matter? Mm. Now, why does it matter what other people think? Right. So now all of a sudden we're getting into his heart. We're getting into, but if he's crying in front of the class, he can't go. Right. So there's an opportunity to pull him in. He knew coming in behind closed doors was an opportunity for him to cry, allow himself to be embarrassed in the truck. He wouldn't share that he was embarrassed because right. His sister was there. You know, he's trying. So it was like this de-escalation, if you will, where he's there that night, he's in class, and he's not crying because he has to show up. He has to roll with the other kids. He has to be who he is. And are there times that, yeah, I mean, if he gets hurt, sure. But you can just see that evening how he got more and more vulnerable as he got safer and safer and safer. And so we have to pay attention to what safety looks like in the environment that we're in, because we don't want our kids being ultra vulnerable in a place that they're not safe.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that's a really important, but that reflects the question of how safe are we as parents? Do our kids feel safe enough to be embarrassed with us without us dismissing it, minimizing it, or even punishing it?
Mm. Man, that is a sobering thought. Like, am I an emotionally safe place for my kids to come, and how am I going to respond? I don't know if you'll recommend it, but I'm going to shamelessly plug one of your books because I've used it with my children. And Josh and his wife have an amazing resource. It's called What Am I Feeling? And it's a book. And I would say, Josh, you correct me if I'm wrong, but I would say geared towards younger children, like preschoolers particularly.
Up through about fourth grade.
This book was so helpful with navigating emotions with my kids. And my son in particular has special needs, had a really significant speech delay, and throughout his preschool years really struggled with language. Just like he couldn't verbalize what he was feeling. And so we had so many tantrums. And we used the book and the feelings chart in the back of the book. And when I say it was a game changer for our household, it really was. Because we wanted to cultivate an atmosphere where it was like, hey, you can feel really angry, but we're not going to sin when we're angry. But what are we going to do? Like, how are we going to process your anger without like throwing a toy or hitting your sister? Like, we've got to find like a good like, how are we going to channel this? But that is a really helpful tool. Are there other resources, Josh, that you would recommend to parents, even at like different stages? Because like it's gonna change probably the types of conversation or even the language that we use if we're raising young kids versus like preteens and then, you know, full-fledged teenagers.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. Thank you for asking. By the way, I can't tell you the number of women who have told me that they bought that book for their not for their kids, but for their husbands to read to their kids so that their husbands would do it. I've heard that. So I can't tell you the number of times. So what am I feeling with? What do I do with worry? What do I do with anger? We have a whole host of books on this stuff. We also have some books. I wrote a book on emotional safety a couple years back. So you can find all that at famousathome.com. We talk about this stuff a lot on our podcast, and we also have coaching programs that my wife and I lead myself for fathers and husbands, and my wife for women as well. And so, you can find all that at Famous at Home, and that would be the place to go do that. So.
Sweet. Well, Josh, thank you so much for being on. I know you got to run on to your next meeting. And so we appreciate you just taking the time to honestly bless our people with the wisdom and the work you've done studying all of these topics.
Yeah, thank you so much. This was a great conversation.
Anytime. I really appreciate you guys having me on. It was such an honor to get to do this with you guys today. So thank you.
Sweet. Thanks, Josh. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Man, what a episode. You know, it was, I don't know, Shane, what was your favorite part of all the things that were said?
I really think what I said earlier about helping your kids learn to create value, to walk into a situation and not, hey, don't touch this, but to train them and to teach them, how do I create value? And then the last thing he said, that Kelly talked about, I went, wow, how many times have I unintentionally not been a safe place for my kids to share their feelings, whether I was frustrated or because they couldn't verbalize it well, it frustrated me. And so I'm going to have to go process this whole podcast.
I mean, it takes so much time. Like, my husband and I will deal with this because every child is wired differently.
Yes.
And so even how you parent one kid differs from how you parent another. And with our 7-year-old, the other day she started crying about something and, you know, kind of had a bad attitude. It was very kind of uncharacteristic. And so Mark was like, go to your room, you know, like, da da da. And I was like, hold on. Like, something is going on with her because that is not typical behavior. And so I went up to her room, talked with her, and sure enough, there was some completely unrelated thing that was hurting her, bothering her, but she was lashing out at her siblings. And I think sometimes, like what Josh said, is like, you know, at first it's like he gets in the car and he's crying, like, oh, is it your shoulder? And it's like, no, it's not my shoulder. Well, it's embarrassment. Well, why is it embarrassment? Like, why do you care what other people think? And it's like kind of like peeling back the layers of an onion with our kids.
Yeah.
And to add, like, your point, like, those things take time. And I think as parents, sometimes we are so rushed that we miss out on these moments for, like, I call it like those true, like, connection/discipleship moments. Because, like, these are the times where your kid is really opening up. And I think those are those awesome opportunities that we have as parents to, like, steward them well. So it's kind of like stepping back and saying, like, can I be late to this next thing for the sake of connecting with my kid right now? And I get that, like, we can't always do that.
Yeah.
But trying to carve out space and time to really connect and listen to our kids, I think, is going to be really vital to raise an emotionally healthy generation.
Very true.
Yeah, I mean, even the, like, when Josh was talking about that of, like, being an emotionally safe place for your kids, I'm like, man, am I being an emotionally safe place for my wife? Because, like, my thing, like, he's, like, talking about either getting lectured, getting disciplined, whatever it may be, and I'm like, frig, like, that's what I mean. Like, Lyndon will present her problems. I'm like, oh, here's the solution. And it's like, but is that what's needed in the moment? And so, yeah.
Of this, I think it's helpful for us as adults to recognize we are only copying what we experienced as kids.
Yeah.
And so there's probably a lot of work that we all have to do on ourselves as individuals in order to, like, show up as the best possible spouse, parent, etc.
Yeah.
So take that to heart. And also just, like, the drift to isolation versus community. Like, I think in episode 1, he mentioned being able to either talk with your spouse or a trusted friend.
Yeah.
I think so often the enemy wants us to feel really defeated in parenting. And so when you can find those people that you trust, whether it is your spouse or it is a good friend, or maybe it's your discipleship group or life group, but, like, find the people that you can be vulnerable with, because parenting is hard. Like, that, the whole premise of our podcast is, like, we get it. We know it's hard. We want to add value. We want to encourage you and help you know that you're not alone in this. And so let us know how we can pray with you, how we can partner with you and support you in this journey.
Absolutely. And you were talking about finding your people, and that's a great book title, because there is a book titled that, Find Your People. Jeannie Allen, I trust her. I haven't read the book yet, but she has a whole thing on parenting in it where she's like, this is part of finding your people, is getting to parent in community. And so would recommend that resource. Not that I've read it. Disclaimer.
Okay, I've read it and it is great. You can count on it.
There we go.
My mother-in-law recommends so many books. And I'll be like, have you read that? She's like, nope.
Oh, no. So I'm a huge nerd and I read so many books.
There you go. Yeah. So we can trust Kelly.
We can't
just
trust
not
Kelly.
Alec.
Well, yeah. I'll just be on time.
I'll be late, but I was going to say, because I have emotionally connected with my kid, I'm like, well, that's not even true necessarily. No.
So anyways, thank you guys for listening. And if you want to find resources, you can go to longhollow.com/parent and find all the resources we have there. If you want to find out more about Josh and what he and his wife are doing, you can go to famousathome.com and find all the stuff that they have there. And so if you want to be part of the conversation, text parent to 98173. And we'd love to hear from you what episodes you want. And like Kelly said, how can we be praying with you? Let us know what struggles you have and how we can come alongside in any way, shape, or form. And so, with that, Shane, Kelly, thank you guys. And we'll talk to you guys next week. See ya.